This is Brock and Saul.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Well, it is the week of opening day. The weather doesn't look too bad. So 60 and sunny today. Today's going to be beautiful. Tomorrow, 60 and sunny once again. Justin, I know, is going to be over at T-Mobile for, what are they calling this?
The skills competition?
Yeah, the skills competition.
It is the Diamond Derby and Skills Challenge.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. 3 to 5 in the afternoon. They're going to have a DJ and, you know, tickets are only $10 and the guys are all going to be there. What is the golf thing again? What did you
Fungo
say?
Fungo golf.
Fungo golf.
Yeah, and some bunting challenge.
Yes.
And some other games as
and
well.
No, Brock, that doesn't have to do with the bunting up there that's on the getting ready for opening day, of course. But yeah, so that's pretty cool before opening day, of course, on Thursday. With that in mind, let's welcome in our friend Jeff Pass. Who I think is going to be joining us again this year, and it looks like we're going to move to Tuesdays at 8:30. Good morning, Jeffrey. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. I'm well. How are you?
We are great. It's opening day week. How could you not be excited? And certainly here in Seattle, for the first time in a generation, we're getting ready for a season where they're defending, having gone to the playoffs. It's really exciting here. Can they do it again?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think playoffs are the only limitation at this point. I think the ceiling for this team is championship. And I know that's crazy for me to say because it's the Seattle Mariners, and I'm sorry to bring this up, but they've never had one of those. So the idea that they are coming in with a roster that is championship caliber this year, I think speaks to the success of this rebuild. Like, we can say pretty definitively now, it's worked. And I think it has a chance to work even better this year than it did last year.
Oh, hold on. Here we go. Brock, go ahead.
Yeah. How does this 10:30 a.m., is this better?
Yes.
How's this going to fit in with your workout schedule? I know you're a workout guy. You know, how's this? Is this a better window for you?
You know, I went and looked, and Orange Theory classes on Tuesday at 10 o'clock in Prairie Village, Kansas, are the lift class as opposed to the class that includes cardio. So, yeah, if it had been a normal class that day, I'm being dead honest with you, I would have said no.
Right.
At 8:30 on Tuesdays.
Big Orange Theory guy, huh?
Try to be, you know, it's me and, my wife comes fairly often, which is great. You know, getting to go work out with your partner is fun. And I don't pretend I am who I'm not, Brock. And I am not going to go into a gym and lift a couple of plates on each side of the bar. I'm going to maintain my dad bod figure, hopefully, and be happy with it.
Let me ask you this briefly before Brock moves on and asks more Mariners questions. Of every baseball writer in America, if every one of them had to max out on the bench, who wins?
Ooh.
What baseball writer in America benches the most? Is it Larry Stone?
I was going to say, I bet Ryan Divish.
It might be Divish.
High up there.
I'm going to say Divish might be top five at the very least, don't you think?
Oh, 100%. Divish is a strong dude. I've had a bunch of very enjoyable winter meetings moments because before I was actually doing the job I am now, I was terrible and didn't care at the winter meetings and just sought fun. And one of the most fun winter meetings moments of all time was watching Ryan Divish and James Wagner semi-drunkenly arm wrestle. And let me tell you, this was the most incredible, like, over-the-top-esque performance I've ever seen. Because, like, Divish is a big dude, but he's not that tall. Like, James Wagner is over 6 feet and barrel-chested like Divish. And these two are standing there, hand in hand, locked together, both doing their absolute best, and it's not moving an inch. And it almost looked like they weren't trying, but in reality, this was just an incredible matchup between two beefy men. And to see Divish, who I believe tore a triceps muscle during this, to see Divish hold off as long as he did, it was a feat of strength worthy of Festivus.
Well, if you said that the expectation level for these Mariners this year has got to be championship and not just playoff, what are a few things as this season kicks off Thursday in the first few months as we kind of talk to you and get into the rhythm and flow of the regular season? What are a few watches for you? If they're going to meet that expectation, what are a few areas you're just going to keep an eye on? You're going to keep a watch. You're going to be digging when you're looking at these Mariners to see if they can do these things to take that step and, as you said, reach a height they've never reached before.
An enormous part of the Mariners' success last year was the health of their starting pitching. Everyone went out and made their starts. And while they have a fail-safe option in Chris Flexen, who's been really good for a couple of years and who would be in most rotations across Major League Baseball, you just can't go into a season thinking that all of your starters are going to stay healthy. That said, starting pitching is an enormous strength for this team. And as good as Robbie Ray's looked this spring, as good as Luis Castillo looked after the trade, and with Logan Gilbert adding the splitter and, you know, coming into his own in his third year and with George Kirby's first full season, like, that's quite a quartet of starters.
Top
right
five?
There. And
top five in baseball?
What's that?
Is that a top five?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Oh, you don't hesitate. Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, I wouldn't even have to think about it. Like, they're really, really good. I mean, you know, when you look at the rotation, do they have like a Scherzer or a Verlander? I'm just thinking of, you know, the rotations that may be in the mix there. No, they don't have. Castillo's is probably right now as close as you're going to come to that. And so they don't have that clear like ace. But in terms of a mixture of both accomplishments in the past and ceiling in the present, the Mariners rotation is in the argument for as good as any in baseball. I'm also going to spend a lot of time watching Jared Kelnick this spring, I think. I just, you know, I think it's happening. Is he going to be the MVP type candidate that when he was at his apex in terms of prospect status and hype that people thought he was going to be? Maybe not, but I think he's got a chance to be a very productive big league player. And when you add that into a lineup that has solid guys in Ty France and Colton Wong and Gino Suarez, and if J.P. Crawford can get back to the 21 version of himself, and Teoscar Hernandez is the epitome of solid. And then you have someone like Julio Rodriguez, who's just, you know, star of stars. That's a really good top-to-bottom lineup.
Yeah, and you might even be leaving out one of their other strengths, which is the bullpen. I mean, we were sort of talking earlier and saying, yeah, I agree with you. I said top five rotation, and Brock wasn't sure he agreed with that, but okay, top five. I think where I feel most secure is that they have a top five pitching staff. When you include, you know, from 1 to 13, everybody that they have, including the bullpen, that's where I feel really good about this team.
Yeah, I'm just so hesitant to look at bullpens and suggest that past performance
sure
will be predictive of future performance, because that's the whole thing about relief pitching. The what made Mariano Rivera such a complete marvel is that he did it year after year after year after year. Relief pitching, generally speaking, is an inconsistent business. And yet the Mariners bullpen 2 years in a row now has been really good. And, you know, outside Eric Swanson, I think everybody's back, and you've got Matt Brash there full time now, and you may have Bryce Miller there sooner than later, or Philander Baroa. Like, there are a lot of options and possibilities for Scott.
Well, and that's exactly what I was talking about. Yeah, I agree with you. Bullpens are fickle as anything in sports. But when you've done it for a couple of years in a row, and you have as many options and as much depth as they have, I put a little more stock into it. And honestly, the biggest thing for me is that they don't mess around with the stupid closer idea that they have been. It's odd because the Mariners don't get a lot of credit for being on the forefront of anything, but I think they've been very much on the forefront of actually using their bullpen in a way that maximizes the strength of the guys in their bullpen.
The process is really, really good. And the synchronicity among Scott Service, the analytics group, the pitching coaches, the strategy folks. They've got a really good process in place, and I think that it's one of the things that's helped them turn the corner, frankly, that they feel like they don't have a secret sauce necessarily, but they feel like they figured out how to maximize guys. And I talked with a bunch of them last fall. I was going to write a story, and then I believe the day that I interviewed it was Paul Sewald, Andres Munoz, Skylar Shibayama, Service, just a bunch of people in the organization. I believe they blew like a 7-run lead or something.
That was the game against Kansas City. Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes.
Yep. That's a strong word in the first little Jeff Passan's show, synchronicity. I don't think I don't have that in my repertoire.
Oh, really?
You
don't know the song by The Police?
No, okay. Actually I don't, but I bet it's a very good one, and Passan absolutely nailed it. Greg Amsinger made some waves about a month ago on our station.
He's not a baseball writer, but if Amsinger were in the competition for the bench press, I feel like he would do pretty well.
Yeah, that's a
he's
big
got, man. He's got height too.
Yeah.
Like every leverage. I saw him at the World Baseball Classic and just walked up to him and I said, "Why are you so tall and handsome? It's annoying."
Yeah,
it's true.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, and great voice. I mean, he's got a lot of tools to work with. Well, he made some waves because he said to our Bob Stelton and Dave Wyman, he said, "You know, I'm going to keep an eye on Fernando Tatis out there in San Diego. I'm going to keep an eye on him because I don't think Tatis wants to be an outfielder. I think he sees himself as an elite shortstop, and I think that's where he wants to play." And then he kind of connected the dots, and, well, let's see about J.P. Crawford, and let's see how all of this works. And San Diego and Seattle share a facility. They've been very friendly in lots of deals and trades through the years. Do you think that could ever be on the horizon if it doesn't work with J.P. and he doesn't get back to being the player he once was?
Fernando Tatis Jr. has a no-trade clause, and whenever somebody has a no-trade clause, I don't even bother speculating about the possibility of them being traded, Brock, just because I don't think it's realistic until they make it clear that they want out. Because whatever San Diego's goals are over the next few years, the thing I think they're banking on the most is that there's going to be flexibility to move salary if they need to, because the guys that they've signed to these big contracts are going to be good still. And that's the key to it all, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we saw Nolan Arenado with $200+ million move. We saw Giancarlo Stanton with $275 million move. Like these mega contracts can be moved, but the guy just needs to be good. And if Fernando Tatis Jr. is good, San Diego probably is not going to want to move him. This is an interesting championship window, and if he's not good, then the Mariners aren't going to want to take him. So is it a possibility? I suppose anything is a possibility, but I do not anticipate Tatis Jr. moving anywhere.
Okay. How about a more reasonable name then that doesn't have a trade clause, that just watched a young superstar shortstop make the roster there in the Bronx in New York? What about Gleyber Torres?
Gleyber Torres absolutely could be on the move. I just don't think you play him at shortstop. I just don't think he's a good everyday major league shortstop defensively right now. And when you've got a guy in J.P. Crawford who I understand you've committed to him for 5 years and a reasonable sum of money. So I don't think the Mariners are actively out there looking for another shortstop at this point. If an upgrade happens to materialize, then yeah, they're not going to be averse to talking about it. But boy, we are. Is this not the era, fellas, that you have been wishing for, where we're like speculating on maybe the one area on the roster the Mariners need to make an upgrade? I let's put it this way. I think if the Mariners wanted to make an upgrade at shortstop, they had ample opportunity to do it each of the last 2 years, and they chose not to. Now, maybe that's the right thing. Maybe that's the wrong thing. Time will tell. But I just don't think that's a priority for this club.
Jeff, I've loved reading your tweets about baseball numbers this spring, and whether it's the success of the new rules or the speed of the game or the batting averages or the stolen bases, all of it. It's been wonderful to see. It makes me wonder, though, and we brought this up earlier, Shannon had a note in her notebook this week that there was a possibility we could see the pitch clock suspended in the ninth inning. Do you think that's a possibility?
Nope. I do not. At least not in the near term. Now, is something that Major League Baseball is going to consider and is going to be open-minded towards? Sure. Well, no, that's not true. I hope so. I'd like to believe so.
Same.
I think they've done a reasonable job of listening to player input, and you know, it's Whit Merrifield and Tyler Glasnow and Jack Flaherty and Ian Happ and Austin Slater are the five players who are talking to MLB's rules committee, and I think the players just understand at this point that MLB is going to see this thing through because they've got thousands of minor league games of data to support the positions that they've taken. And, you know, when you have the conviction that the league does on what the pitch clock is and what it's going to do to the game, you don't want to tinker with it before it starts. You got to see it in practice. But if games, when they're counting all of a sudden on Thursday, if games feel too rushed in the ninth inning or it gets to a problematic point, I think there's going to be conversation about it. I also think this, and we need to keep this in mind, as somebody earlier this week, I got a big pitch clock story running tomorrow. Somebody earlier this week said to me, April is going to be an S show. And I think he said that because he understands something bad is going to happen, whether it's a game ending on an auto ball or an auto strike because of pitch clock violation, or a player not being able to get back to his position in time because he was running, you know, an outfielder running 100 feet to get a foul ball, and you know, the umpire doesn't notice and doesn't stop the clock to allow him to get back to his position, and then a ball gets hit into the gap, which he would have gotten otherwise. You know, something is bound to happen. I caution everyone not to become too prisoner of the momenty, because in the grand scheme of things, there are 2,430 games this season. And if there are two of them that, you know, are affected by this, we are literally talking like a 1 in 1,000 situation, or if there are five of them, a 1 in 500 situation. We don't legislate off of outliers. We don't take anomalies and allow them to dictate policy. We don't do that in any area of our lives. So why should we do that with baseball? I don't get me wrong. If this is something that comes up consistently and it's truly problematic, then yes, it should absolutely be discussed, considered, and perhaps implemented. But I just want people to understand there are going to be screw-ups. The fact that the pitch clock has been rolled out and, in my eyes, has been as much of a success as it is an absolute wonder, because, boys, how many times have we looked at something that Major League Baseball rolled out and said, God. They got that wrong. I don't think they got this wrong. I think this is a grand slam so far.
Well, the synchronicity of Pass In with Brock and Salk has been spot on in show number one here. Last quick question for me, final question. If you could buy stock in any Mariner, some that are more established and have a baseball card and a resume, some that are just in their sophomore year going at it, but if you could buy stock in any Mariner for this season, whom would it be?
I'm sorry for being a little pedantic here, but is the price of every player the same?
Sure.
Like, or does Julio cost more than?
No, Julio costs more. You got to buy. Yeah, you're basing stock based on where their value's at right now.
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to go George Kirby and Logan Gilbert, and I'll split my shares between them because I think the ascent of the Mariners is going to be built on the back of pitching, and I think that those two have chances to be real dudes, like all-star caliber guys. Gilbert's stuff is just overwhelming, the quality of it. And Kirby might have the best fastball command in baseball. Just the combination of the quality of his fastball and his ability to locate it.
And yet, it's a great question, Brock. I love the whole, you know, based on where they are right now, you could make a pretty legitimate argument that as high as his stock is, the best buy in the Mariners is still Julio because of just how enormous. I mean, it's like buying Amazon, because at some point it just has the ability to go so high.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the ceiling there is it's like Junior in his prime ceiling. Which, wow. I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. is one of the best players of all time. So maybe I'm getting a little out of pocket saying that, but Julio is everything. He is power. He is speed. He is defense. He is leadership. He is charisma. You see him on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and you don't say, they put him on the cover of Sports Illustrated. You say, yeah, they put him on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
And I'll add one other little thing, because we were there around him for a week. That dude works. I'm not even talking about his beautiful eyes that were unbelievably mesmerizing.
They are mesmerizing, but Jeff. If you get close to Julio, I want you to be, kind of prepare yourself for the depth of his green eyes.
But his work ethic.
Are you talking me or you as in the general audience?
Really, everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, because yes, I have been transfixed by them.
They're unbelievable, aren't they?
He's a beautiful man. We gotta let Pastor go.
They're pools of ocean water, and not like bad ocean water. It's like Caribbean ocean.
Absolutely.
Water.
Absolutely.
Except there's not an ocean in the Caribbean. So there you go. Jeff,
there you go. It's just a sea. Nice job, Jeff. Thank you. Good stuff as always, and we're excited to renew our acquaintance Tuesdays at 8:30 this year. Thanks, man. We appreciate it.
I look forward to it, boys.
All right, there you go.